The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. Right now I'm reading from the May 2024 issue of the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And here's an article that's certainly relevant to the summer on Lyme disease. And it says, puts the ick in tick. Ticks carry a bad reputation for good reasons. To eat, these parasites need blood from another living thing. Some ticks are fairly harmless when attached to their hosts, but others transmit infections that can range from relatively mild to life-changing. Lyme disease is a common condition caused by ticks. It's transmitted by the small black-legged tick, also called the deer tick. Cases of Lyme disease are most common in the upper Midwest and northeastern regions, but can occasionally occur elsewhere. Experts believe that as many as 476,000 Americans are infected with Lyme disease yearly. This number has increased significantly in the past decade. The disease also is often found in some parts of Europe and Asia. 14% of the world's population will get it at some point. A bullseye rash at the bite site is a classic characteristic sign of early Lyme disease, but it's not always present. The infection can also cause headache, fever, joint pain, and flu-like symptoms. If you have any combination of these symptoms that linger, and you've been in an area prone to ticks, with woods or tall grass or brush, check in with your healthcare team. This is also true if you see a tick attached to your skin. Deer ticks are tiny, but they can expand dramatically in size once latched on. If you live in an area where Lyme disease is common, the distinct rash might be enough for a diagnosis. Blood tests may be used to identify antibodies to the Lyme-causing bacteria. Lyme disease can be treated successfully with oral antibiotics. The illness can cause lingering pain and inflammation in the joints, heart palpitations and irregular heart rhythms, various neurologic problems, and rarely brain and nervous system infection. If not caught early, it's possible for some of these symptoms to linger even after the infection is treated. If you're in a tick habitat, you can prevent ticks from latching onto your skin by wearing long sleeves and pants, shoes, and long socks. Apply tick repellent and check yourself, your loved ones, and your pets after being in areas where ticks thrive. If you find a tick, grasp the tick close to the skin surface using tweezers if available. Pull the tick upward with a steady, continuous motion. If a small part of the tick remains in the skin, leave it alone and let the skin heal. Clean the bite with an antiseptic, like rubbing alcohol or soap and water. Also, you should call your healthcare team. Preserve the tick in a container if possible, in case your care team recommends bringing it in for an appointment. There's also a brief article, which is a short interview with Dr. Bobby Pritt, director of the Clinical Parasitology Laboratory and co-director of the Vector-Borne Diseases Laboratory at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. The first question is, can you describe how the understanding or treatment of Lyme disease has changed in the last decade or so? Our understanding of Lyme disease has expanded significantly with the large investments in clinical research and funding. We have learned that most people can be treated effectively with oral antibiotics, and that early treatment prevents the spread of infection throughout the body. 10 to 20% of people with Lyme disease will experience symptoms that can take weeks to months to subside. The range of symptoms is referred to as post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. Although the cause of this syndrome is not yet known, studies have shown that long-term antibiotic therapy does not have a sustained benefit for these people and is not recommended. It's important to note that ticks transmit a variety of pathogens, including the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. Some infections can be life-threatening, so I urge people to take tick bite prevention seriously. It's also important to perform tick checks frequently, so ticks can be removed quickly from the body. A tick must be attached for at least 36 hours to transmit Lyme disease. Removal before this time will prevent that particular infection. Other tick-borne pathogens can be transmitted in less time, possibly within a few minutes to hours. There are Lyme vaccines for humans in clinical trials, and hopefully these will be available soon. And just to mention, Lyme is spelled capital L-Y-M-E. Finally, in the May 2024 issue of the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, here's a section called Second Opinion. My ring finger clicks when it moves and tends to get stuck in place when I try to bend it, even with something as simple as buttoning my shirt. I'm told it may be trigger finger. What are my options? Yes, your symptoms do suggest trigger finger, a common condition of older adults. Typically, when you move your finger or thumb, rope-like tendons in the finger glide smoothly within a protective tunnel, also known as a sheath. The tendon or its sheath may thicken, and nodules may form, making passage of the tendon through the sheath difficult. Trigger finger typically occurs in just one finger, but it's possible for more than one to be affected. Generally, it's the ring and middle fingers. The condition is often worse in the morning. Women tend to have higher rates of trigger finger. Injury or overuse, like with repetitive hand tasks, sustained gripping, or use of vibrating tools, can cause the tendons that run along the finger bone to become irritated and inflamed. Infection, rheumatoid arthritis, and diabetes also can cause or contribute to tendon damage. As for treatments, it's important to rest the affected hand. This may include splinting or buddy taping the troublesome finger to the one next to it in an extended position for up to 6 weeks. You may receive a splint to wear on the finger during sleep. It can also help to modify your use of the hand, like stopping an irritating activity or finding ways to ease your grip. Warm water soaks and anti-inflammatory medications like ibuprofen may be helpful. Sometimes the condition goes away with rest. For persistent or advanced trigger finger, a corticosteroid injection can help control symptoms. A single injection resolves the problem about 50% of the time. A second injection may be considered if the first isn't fully effective. Injections are used more cautiously if you have diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis. Even when with an injection, you should limit potentially aggravating hand activity if possible. When injections aren't effective, an outpatient surgical procedure to release the tendon from the sheath may be needed. And then there's a next question is, I regularly feel dizzy in the late morning and early afternoon, and I've even fainted a few times. This only started happening in my late 60s. What could be the cause? And the answer is, you may be experiencing a drop in your blood pressure, which can make you feel lightheaded, faint, or dizzy. You also may experience blurred or fading vision or fatigue. These symptoms can be dangerous because they can lead to falls. A drop in blood pressure also can cause pain or a feeling of heaviness in the neck, shoulders, and head. Based on the timing of your symptoms, you may be specifically experiencing postprandial hypotension. This is a decrease in systolic blood pressure, the top blood pressure number, of at least 20 millimeters of mercury that occurs within 2 hours after eating. When you eat, your body sends blood to the digestive organs to help process and digest your food. Typically, the body compensates for this movement of blood by narrowing blood vessels and quickening the heart rate. If your body doesn't sufficiently adjust, your blood pressure drops. It's not always clear why postprandial hypotension occurs. In some people, it's related to a condition in or affecting the nervous system, such as Parkinson's disease or diabetes, where parts of the brain or nerves that control automatic body functions, like blood vessel constriction, aren't working properly. Older age also can be a factor. Your healthcare team could diagnose postprandial hypotension by tracking your blood pressure to detect a drop after eating. You may find that your symptoms improve if you eat smaller portions, focus on low-carbohydrate meals, and avoid alcohol. Drinking 12 to 16 ounces of cold water before a meal may be helpful. Ask your care team to review your medications for any that could be contributing to the problem. Now I'm going to turn my attention to another issue of the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And this is a special report about osteoarthritis. And it says, beware the wear and tear. She was just 29 years old. A trip to the doctor after a minor injury that didn't get better revealed the diagnosis of osteoarthritis in three joints. I can't say it was a surprise, as osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis are common in my extended family, Sue Sherrick says, but I thought it would happen when I was much older. Sherrick, now 71, has lived most of her adult life with the condition. Osteoarthritis, also called degenerative arthritis or wear and tear arthritis, is the most common form of arthritis. It affects more than 30 million adults in the United States. Sherrick, who splits time between her native Minnesota and a winter home in South Texas, has achieved master gardener status. In gardening terms, her journey from young adult with osteoarthritis to a thriving senior with osteoarthritis has included plenty of busts, but also plenty of blooms. It's the nature of treating a chronic condition. You try things, you wait, you hope. Sometimes weeds pop up out of the soil. Other times, blossoms and beauty appear. At first, I believed I didn't need to make any changes in my life to cope, so I simply took massive doses of aspirin to control the pain. It worked for a while until at age 35 she developed chronic ringing in the ears, known as tinnitus. A doctor suggested that an over-reliance on aspirin caused this troubling side effect. Then she got another hard lesson. Continuing all her strenuous physical activities, including long-distance running, may not have been wise with her condition. By age 40, my lower spine was affected by deteriorating vertebrae, stenosis, and pain. At 45, my neck was involved. By age 50, I was having trouble walking. I couldn't lift my leg to get on my bike and was sent to an orthopedic surgeon who told me, "You have the hips of someone 85 years old." Sherrick had hip replacement surgery with several subsequent revisions, totaling 5 procedures. The final procedure prompted some overdue lifestyle changes. It took a team approach, including a rehabilitation therapist, physical therapist, pain management doctors, and others. She learned about pain medications, both prescription and non-prescription, that work without causing serious side effects. She took to being active in gardening and other activities that give her a workout while being gentler on her joints. She eats a better diet. She gets better sleep and spends more of her time in the slow lane of life. It hasn't always been easy. Her knee, thumbs, and wrists have required surgery, but she was able to work for decades for the federal government. Now she's older, wiser, and just as optimistic as she was at age 29. She's learned a list of lessons, enough to fill blogs on Mayo Clinic Connect, an online forum where she is a volunteer mentor. Her message is clear. Living with this disease may not be easy, but being smart about your care and proactive with lifestyle changes can turn your story of difficulty into one of living your best life. Osteoarthritis may affect any joint in the body, but it most often occurs in the hands, knees, hips, and back. Less commonly, it affects the elbows, the wrists, shoulders, and ankles. Initially, osteoarthritis tends to affect only one joint, but it can develop in others over time. The risk of osteoarthritis increases with age. The disease most often develops in people over 40. It's more common in women than men over a lifetime, although before the age of 45 is more prevalent in men. It's relatively rare among younger adults unless they have an underlying secondary cause of osteoarthritis or have had prior joint injury. Those affected often have a family history of the disease. An active lifestyle may slow the development of osteoarthritis. Still, almost everyone over age 65 will experience some joint damage and have at least mild signs of osteoarthritis on imaging tests. These mild changes may or may not cause pain or affect your activity. Just remember, you're not alone on this journey, Shrek says. Over half of adults over 60 have some degree of osteoarthritis. We just don't necessarily tell you about our aches and pains. Osteoarthritis occurs when the protective cartilage that cushions the end of bones in the joints deteriorates. With use, the soft, pliable layer of cartilage may start to wear through, and its smooth surface becomes rough. At this point, you may feel intermittent pain in the joint, especially after strenuous use. If the cartilage wears away completely, you may be left with bone rubbing on bone, which further damages the bones and often causes pain. The body tries to repair the damage, but lost cartilage typically can't be regenerated. When this protective layer wears away, new bone growth, called spurs or osteophytes, may form along the sides of existing bones. Prominent lumps can form around the joint, most often in the hands and feet. Pain and tenderness over the bony lumps may be noticeable early in the disease, and less so as it progresses. If cartilage in a joint is severely damaged, the joint lining, also called the synovial membrane, may become inflamed. A low-grade inflammation called synovitis can cause episodes of joint swelling. Early changes to the cartilage and bone don't always result in pain or other symptoms. Many older adults have osteoarthritis but are not aware of it until a healthcare provider sees it on an X-ray. A severe injury to one or more joints at an early age may lead to osteoarthritis years later. Excessively stressful use of joints over many years, like working at a job that requires repeated bending, may cause osteoarthritis later in life. If certain activities cause joint pain, try to avoid or limit those activities until you've had the joint examined. Being overweight also increases your risk of developing osteoarthritis, especially in the knees and hips. Osteoarthritis symptoms usually develop slowly and worsen over time. At first, many people notice pain and stiffness when getting out of bed in the morning. This feeling of stiff or creaky joints after a period of inactivity, a phenomenon called gelling, usually passes within 30 minutes once the body gets moving again. Others often notice osteoarthritis pain after strenuous activity, like a long walk or hike. Resting the joint helps relieve the pain. You may also experience joint pain or tenderness during or after use, or following a period of inactivity. Joint discomfort with changes in the weather. Joint swelling and stiffness after use. The formation of bony lumps on the middle or end finger joints or at the base of the thumb. Loss of joint flexibility. And a grating sensation with joint movement. For example, you may first feel pain and stiffness in one index finger. Eventually, multiple finger joints in both hands may be affected. Your fingers may be stiff, making it hard to hold a pen or open a jar. Your knees may start to ache after a game of tennis or a jog in the park. Normal wear and tear in your joints doesn't necessarily result in osteoarthritis. And osteoarthritis isn't an inevitable part of aging. But if you develop the condition, the symptoms don't go away without treatment. In the early stages, osteoarthritis pain often fades within a year. But it can return if you overuse an affected joint. Pain tends to increase over time, progressively limiting your activity. Osteoarthritis often affects joints on one side of the body at first. Gradually, joints on the opposite side also become involved. If you have joint pain and stiffness that may be from osteoarthritis, schedule an appointment with your health care provider. A diagnosis of osteoarthritis is usually based on your medical history and a careful physical exam. Your care provider may ask for details about your symptoms, like pain, swelling, or stiffness. The nature of the joint pain and specific joints that are affected can help to distinguish between different forms of arthritis. Your provider also may want to know whether the symptoms started gradually or suddenly, how they've changed over time, and how they're affected by activity. Mild morning stiffness is common in osteoarthritis and usually gets better after a few minutes of activity. In contrast, morning stiffness that lasts for hours is more likely to be a symptom of rheumatoid arthritis or another type of inflammatory disorder. Your provider may ask whether you have other symptoms like fever, fatigue, or skin problems. You should mention any events or changes that occurred just before your symptoms began and whether you have a family history of arthritis. During a physical exam, your provider will check your joints for tenderness, swelling, and redness. Look for bony outgrowths called bone spurs. Listen for a crunching or grating sound called crepitus, C-R-E-P-I-T-U-S, which indicates that the joint cartilage surface has become rough. Move each joint through its range of motion to check for pain and limited motion. To get a more comprehensive picture, your provider might also recommend imaging testing. Cartilage doesn't show up on X-ray images, but cartilage loss is revealed by a narrowing of the space between the bones and the joint. An X-ray also can show bone spurs around a joint. MRI, or magnetic resonance imaging, uses radio waves and a strong magnetic field to produce detailed images of bone and soft tissue, including cartilage. MRI isn't commonly needed to diagnose osteoarthritis, but can help to provide more information in complex cases. Although there's no blood test for osteoarthritis, certain tests can help rule out other causes of joint pain, like rheumatoid arthritis. In joint fluid analysis, a care team uses a needle to draw fluid from an affected joint. The fluid is then tested for inflammation to determine whether pain is caused by gout or an infection rather than osteoarthritis. Keep in mind that the presence of osteoarthritis at a joint isn't always a serious problem. Many people have no symptoms or disability from the condition. They don't even realize that they have osteoarthritis and experience little, if any, discomfort. While there's no known cure for osteoarthritis, you and your healthcare team can develop a treatment program to reduce pain, preserve joint movement, and maintain quality of life. Part of this treatment plan is going to be medication. These will include acetaminophen, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like Advil or Motrin. They may also include duloxetine or Cymbalta. This is developed as an antidepressant and is also approved to treat chronic pain, including osteoarthritis. Duloxetine has shown benefits in managing pain and increasing range of motion, especially in people with knee osteoarthritis. Surgery may be an option. First, they may give you cortisone injections into your joint to relieve pain for a few weeks. The number of cortisone injections you can receive each year is generally limited to 3 or 4 because the medication can worsen joint damage. They may also do lubrication injections, which are injections of hyaluronic acid to relieve pain by providing some cushioning in your knee. They may do bone realignment. In a knee osteotomy, a surgeon cuts across the bone above or below the knee, then removes or adds a wedge of bone. And they may do joint replacement. In joint replacement surgery, your surgeon removes damaged joint surfaces and replaces them with plastic and metal parts. For most people, joint replacement provides pain relief and improves mobility. Knee replacements can last 15 to 20 years. Surgical risks include infections and blood clots. After recovery, you can engage in low-impact activities, but you should avoid higher-impact activities like jogging, jumping, and contact sports. Artificial joints are going to wear out or come loose and might eventually need to be replaced or revised. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Yunkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.